Pardon the interruption, but I'm Kevin Blackstone. Tony, the Olympics actually started today. Do you have Olympic fever?
Tony Kornheiser, that depends. Would it make my groin itch?
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
That might be something else. You
really?
Let the doctor check that out.
I really like the Olympics.
Do you think we're going to have any breakthroughs here in the new year? This year? Any breakthrough? Or are we going to be sitting here doing the 2013 wrap-up saying, you know, no UFOs, no Bigfoot?
The first thing I thought of when you said that was, I hope so.
That's where it came from. I'm reaching the desperation point.
Well, I haven't reached any desperation.
No, I know.
The only time I really take any notice of the UFO and paranormal thing is when I either, one, interview somebody on my show, and we talk about it, or two, just something so undeniably weird just pops up that everybody hears about it, and somebody at work will say, hey, Greg, you're into all that weird stuff. Did you hear about this?
Yeah.
And I'll have to go take a look at it. So, no, I don't really actively follow it anymore because I've stopped being amazed and surprised, really. The only things I'm amazed and surprised by are, you know, kind of like normal things, normal science things or normal technology things or normal, whatever, weird things like the, because there's plenty of stuff like 40 and Times type stuff going on, like the kid in China that can see in the dark with blue eyes. And
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of weird. I was thinking of that. There's a lot of weird stuff that happens that you just don't, you can't even classify it, really.
I know. Those are things that still turn me on and I still like. What was my favorite I mentioned to you before we came on? Oh, the guy in Seattle who said police came and he was all beat up and screaming because he'd been injured, and he said a bunch of leprechauns beat him up for dancing with a woman. I love that story. And if there's nothing in the story, just like, you know, were there other people said that he just got beat up by some guys?
Yeah.
But everybody was, but the funny thing was, and this report it also says when the police got there, everybody was running away from the scene of whatever it was. Like, is that because they all were involved and they thought the cops would bust them? Did they all see something they didn't want to talk about? Were they really leprechauns there? What the hell's going, you know, the story is frustratingly inconclusive about what's going on.
Right.
Or what happened. It happened in June or something.
That's the guy you gotta get on your show.
Yeah. Did you have a and he said one of them was wearing a tank top.
Oh, that's their enforcer. Oh, weird. See, yeah, it's the weird little things like that that fascinate me. I know, I don't know if you've been following the David Paulides work that he's been doing on missing people that go missing in national parks.
Somebody mentioned that on one of my shows, and I said, oh, I don't know what you're talking about. Walter kind of did.
He's found, like, dozens, if not hundreds, of cases of people that go missing in national parks, and either they're never found again, or stories like of like a toddler, like a 2 or a 3 year old that, you know, he'll go missing. They'll find the kid, but the kid will be like across a river, like there's no way the kid could have gotten over there.
Yeah.
So really weird stuff. He's someone I've been meaning to get on my show here, but the books are like 400 pages, and there's 2 of them, so I just don't have the time to sit down and read them. And
oh, now, great. Now I got a whole other group of books I have to read. That sounds great.
Yeah, so, I mean, that kind of stuff, that's the stuff that really excites me, too. It's you know, I can't really find...
I don't care about more stories of the statue of Virgin Mary crying tears or, you know, rains of fish or anything like that, but... Yeah, getting beat up by leprechauns or strange disappearances in national parks is, yeah, those are new and, you know, and interesting because of the novelty of it.
Right. Now, just to get back to one of the things we touched on, what do you make of the Chase Brandon story? I mean, I don't know what to make of it, except that I think he put out a book, so part of me is just like, well, he saw something a long time ago, he claims, and now coincidentally he's willing to talk about it now that he has a book out.
Dean's story. I saw something that was classified in secret, and or Bill Cooper, any of those people. I saw something that was classified in secret that confirms a lot of what your suspicions were, and that's it. And I don't have a copy of it. Okay.
Right. It's like we can't really do much with this other than just to trust you.
Yeah. And not that I don't trust him.
Right.
I have no idea. The funny thing is that, and I tweeted this actually when it happened, there's a guy, I think... the producer or narrator or something like that of an old UFO film in the 1970s. His name was Brandon Chase.
Interesting. Was it him?
Yeah. I suppose I'm pretty sure it's a coincidence, but if you go on IMDb, he's listed as like a producer or a voiceover guy or something. Look up Brandon Chase.
Weird.
I haven't looked in months, but I saw it because somebody talked to Stan Friedman, and it was Bob Emmenegger. He said he'd heard Stan Friedman say, oh, that guy was involved with a UFO film in the 70s. So I looked it up, and it wasn't. It wasn't Chase Brandon. It was Brandon Chase.
Weird.
I don't even know if Chase Brandon's his real name, actually. I think it's a pseudonym.
It may be. I don't know.
I seem to remember that it was a pseudonym.
Yeah, it's a hard sort of story to really... I guess the idea behind all of this from the UFO research point of view is that at some point you reach some critical mass of accumulation of UFO porn.
What people like Greer and Bassett and the Disclosure Project and all this, I think they're trying to do is get to some, like you said, some critical point whereby there's so many people from the government just saying, look, we were exposed to this stuff. It's... Look, right when we talk about this.
I know.
We were exposed to this stuff. It appears to be real. I think there is a cover-up of some kind of something anomalous, probably an alien civilization. And if enough people say that, then people that aren't convinced will be convinced. I don't think that's true. I think they can talk about it all they want, and nobody's going to be convinced until there's just some undeniable thing which makes, you know, everybody, you know, think that, okay, there are aliens from other planets, and yes, they are visiting us.
Right, right.
I don't think that's true. I don't know what to make of the people from the government coming out with revelations that that's what it is. Maybe that's the only way they can make sense of it.
Who's that, the government or the people?
Government and the people that are reporting these incidents.
Yeah, maybe.
They can make sense of it, and and my idea is that the cover-up is the only way we can make sense of it is aliens from other planets, but it doesn't fit all of that, and there's nothing we can do about it, so it's going to remain unresolved for now.
Yeah.
Because we don't have a 100% answer. If you don't have a 100% answer about something and what to do about it and how to control it, why deal with it? As long as it's not causing a problem, which it isn't.
Well, the government has no incentive to tell anybody about this anyway, so.
No, because it's a non-issue. I mean, it's either it's not causing any problems, it's just a minor annoyance, and it doesn't affect any policies, it doesn't affect the world, it doesn't affect how people are controlled by the information that's given to them. It doesn't affect any of that stuff, so it's a non-issue.
Right. Let me call yourself so we're not distracted by all this.
Okay.
Hold on. What's the number, actually? Let me see.
Remember to edit it out.
Don't worry. Go ahead. All right, folks, that's his number. Give him a call. I'll call you right back.
All right.
I've endorsed sort of the generational disclosure idea, where eventually just people from my generation, you know, maybe even the generation, you know, the millennials that everybody can't stand, the people younger than me, because I'm no spring chicken anymore myself. So it's like maybe the people when they're the people in their 20s, when they're in charge of the world, maybe then things will change. But there's still going to need to be some kind of like switch that gets flipped.
Yeah, I don't know what that switch is going to be. Like, a lot of people have said this. I think it's going to come from the phenomenon itself, not from us.
Yeah.
Most likely, because there's, you know, what are we admitting to? An unknown? Nobody admits to an unknown.
Right.
Yes, we don't know what to do. Yes, it's unknown. It's like, well, people don't like that. People like certainty.
Yeah, unless there was this whole fabricated scenario where it's like, you know, they're all of a sudden they're like, let's take another look at this UFO thing because, you know, the generations before us dropped the ball on this and maybe there's something to it, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Then they just start, they start all over again like it's the 50s all of a sudden, you know.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing. I gave a talk about this a couple of years ago where I said get rid of UFO organizations, start over again. Stop doing abduction research, at least the part where you publish books and, you know, go on lecture tours and all that. Stop all this stuff and start it with, if at all possible, no preconceived ideas, or at least different ones.
Right, right.
and see what happens. And if it's not tenable, then try something else, but don't stick with one thing. Because it, all it is, you know, people, giants of the field like Hopkins and Jacobs and Mack and people like that. Whitley Strieber, I guess, to some extent, just saying this is, well, Strieber isn't really in the same camp, but just saying, you know, these are aliens coming from other planets to steal our DNA. Well, that's fine, but there's no real way to prove that to anybody outside your group. So either you've got the secret to the, you know, an incredible secret that nobody wants to admit to, or you're not entirely right.
Well, do you think...
I would go with the not entirely right thing. I would go with, you are a stepping stone to some different understanding.
That's interesting.
So you cannot deny their research. You cannot deny what they found out, but you can question their conclusions, which I do. but all that data and all that research and all that thinking about it is there's it's not worthless by a long shot. It should be used as a basis for something else, whether it be to, which I hope it isn't, to carry it on, or two, to use it to as a building block to go in another direction. Like, well, we've tried this, now let's go 180 degrees over here or whatever.
Right, right.
I don't know what that is. I'm not smart enough, but that's my idea of how that could change.
Well, I think abduction research is going to go in that direction, just because the three big players are pretty much, well, two of them are gone, and the third one has sort of been marginalized to a great extent. So really there's no tentpoles in abduction research anymore. So I think that it will go in that direction.
Yeah.
UFO research, I don't know. I'm still, you know, I'm not sure where. I feel like, I mentioned this to Stan when we talked for the holiday show. It's like, I feel like at some point, I feel like ufology is sort of no longer trying to figure this out anymore. It was like...
Because they reached a dead end, I think.
Yeah.
Nothing... We've tried to... Does somebody like Kevin Randall say, yes, we figured out what it is. It's aliens coming from other planets. That's absolutely what it is. But there's no way to prove that. I mean,
right.
You may think that's what it is, but there's no way to prove that except the fact that that's what you think it is. It seems more advanced than us in some ways, and a lot of it seems to be coming from the sky or from space. We don't see it coming in from Mars or from interstellar space or whatever. Who knows how it would get here? I'm not saying it's not aliens from other planets. Very well could be. In fact, there may be ways to get around the faster-than-light thing. There's a lot of ideas about that now. So there could be things coming from other planets, but it hasn't panned out really yet. It's just what we think. That's what we think it is.
Right, right.
We seem to think we're so advanced that we know that's what it is. But you know, apparently if that makes us smarter than somebody in the Middle Ages that thought it was demons or something. Oh no, well we're much more advanced and sophisticated now. We know it comes from another planet. Oh yeah, how do you prove that? Besides, that's just what you think.
Exactly. It's a very
we've gone over this so many times.
Messy situation, I know. Well, well, here's an interesting sort of question here. Now we've made it through 2012. That was sort of the big apocalyptic date. I'm sure there'll be sort of minor, smaller ones in the years ahead. But do you think that was the last, you know, sort of mainstream apocalyptic date that we're going to see for quite a long time? And we had Y2K, then we had 2012. There's no specific date really that anyone has on their mind right now. So do you think?
Well, maybe the next one will be
2020 or something.
Yeah, like C Lab 2020. no, I think it'll be the next doomsday that somebody will predict will be a close asteroid flyby.
Interesting. So they'll have something actually attached to it instead of just being like, something bad's going to happen. We don't know what it is.
Yeah, but the thing it'll be is well, you know, it has to be a direct hit. Otherwise, because it'll be one that's like, well, it might, but it may not. You know, because at any point that could happen.
Right.
It would be so close, it'd be kind of hard to, well, I don't know, maybe they can figure out by how it passes near certain planets and all that, how the orbits are going to be affected. But I have a feeling that that's the next one. It's like, you know, there's an asteroid swarm coming. We're all going to die. Or I don't know what. Or maybe somebody will think that they, you know, that the scientists are wrong and they're covering it up or something like that.
But yeah.
I bet it'll be some, like, some concrete celestial thing like that. Supposed to be two comets in 2013. One, like, in June or April or May or June, and one at, near the end of the year.
Interesting. So that might cause a minor frenzy.
Not so spectacular, yeah. And one's supposed to be quite spectacular if it doesn't fizzle like Kohoutek and some of these others.
Because if you think about it, there really wasn't any. I can't think of predating Y2K. What was the, you know, what, 1984? Was there really any?
No.
Date that was like all hyped up?
No. I can't really think of any doomsdays before. You know, and every millennium it happens. It happened in, you know, 1800 and 1900, and probably happened in 1700 too, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I don't know why the arbitrary, you know, dating that we've come up with is supposed to be a you know, unless there's some, you know, subconscious, resonance with the future or something like that we've locked into just by creating our calendar system. I don't know, but which could be, I suppose, but anytime somebody says something's going to happen, it never seems to really, you know, people can't really predict anything except really sporadically and really inaccurately and kind of a hit and miss thing.
Right, right.
I think people can predict stuff for themselves or people around them a lot more easily than they predict kind of society-wide things.
Interesting, yeah.
Because it's more relevant to them personally. I mean, well, the whole planet disappearing, I guess, would be relevant to them personally, too. But in the short term, I think that people are more finely tuned that are good at it, are more finely tuned to things that affect them and their immediate friends and their immediate universe of experience.
Well, the nature of sort of the predictive of it all. The nature of prediction, I thought, was kind of encapsulated by the 2012 thing in the sense that everybody, you know, had their mind trained on 12/21/12 for the big, you know, end of the world, something crazy is going to happen, blah, blah, blah. But then if you look at the past month, actually 1 week before that was the crazy shooting in Connecticut.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, see, we really can't. I think that encapsulates the whole trickiness of prediction. It's like no one was saying something crazy is going to happen on 12/14, but something crazy did happen on 12/14.
Yeah. Besides, the Mayans. Why would the Mayans give a shit that a fairly large group of children were slaughtered on one day in the United States in 2012?
Yeah, no. I'm not saying that it was contingent upon the Mayan calendar. I'm just saying that, like, you can never really predict anything. Like, the things that really become major, relevant, resonant moments always seem to come out of nowhere. 9/11, no one, you know. It's like that kind of thing.
Yeah, there's all kinds of things after the fact where people said they had, you know, visions of it or whatever, but you know, you don't hear about that until it's confirmed because people have dreams about weird and bad things all the time.
Right, right. Nobody was like out there saying, you know, people predicted sort of this attack on America and stuff like that, but nobody predicted on 9/11. You know what I mean? I guess I'm just saying that, like, trying to put a fine date on things never works. And I think that you know, juxtaposed against each other, the shooting and then the Mayan calendar indicates exactly that point.
Yeah, there's a interviewed Dean Radin a few weeks ago. The first time I interviewed him in years, I always feel like I'm racing to keep up with him. But the reason I said the thing about the personal relevance was that's the first thing I got out of him, I think, and then also remote viewers like Joe McMonagle said the same thing. That's why they used to show the remote viewers what they were predicting afterwards and take them there, because then it would have personal relevance for them, and maybe that was coming back to them through time. Time became, you know, not a barrier anymore, and they could perceive that. But the thing about, long-term is not good, but Radin has this thing called the Global Consciousness Project, I think.
Yeah.
Where they have a bunch of random number generators all over the world, like, I don't know how many, probably 60, 80, 100 of them.
Oh, wow.
All running, and then when there's a large event that happens, they go and look and see if the randomness of those random number generators have been affected, so that they're not just doing equal ones and zeros all the time, which is what they're normally doing. They're just spitting out random ones and zeros, and after, you know, a few minutes or a few hours, it averages out to 50-50.
Yeah.
But they find that when something earth-changing, society-changing, shocking, or whatever happens, and a lot of people hear about it, all these number generators start to throw out non-random numbers.
Right, right.
Or you know, either side of 50%. There's more ones or more zeros. And they found that over and over again, and it's sometimes it starts before the thing happens, like a few minutes or a few hours before they'll see the spike start to happen when they go back and look at the data.
Yeah, yeah. That's but the idea that people are sort of tapped into something in the ether.
Yeah, they're predicting a future, but only like an hour in advance or something, or a few minutes or something.
And they're not even really predicting anything. They're just sort of
they're not
spiking
doing anything
mentally or something.
Yeah, yeah. People may not even be aware of such a thing. But I've got a strong suspicion that there is mind over matter is something that happens. And yes, these random number generators are being affected by people's feelings about the future and actually about the present, because the thing will start to go up before the event, that it will spike like some hours after the event, and then in the next few days they go back down to normal randomness again.
Right.
It happened during 9/11, Princess Diana's funeral, actually, not the actual news of it coming out, because I don't know if they had the thing set up by then.
Oh, weird.
And all hooked up, but it, you know, OJ trial, verdict, things like that.
Yeah. Major national, like international events.
Yeah, major national or international news. Yeah, and these things are in countries all over the world. They're, you know, Europe and India and Japan and the United States, and South America and other places.
Now, one big UFO news story that resonated with me and clearly you was the revelation of Falcon, which is you've been teasing us with for years, which finally happened this year. So I guess talk a little bit about
exciting,
that. We have an idea on the show to talk about.
It was exciting for about a month. It was exciting for about a month, and everybody kind of forgot about it, which is fine because it wasn't that horribly important. But Bill Moore told me about this like in 2007, I think.
Yeah.
And what I was doing since then was, well, first he told me to guess it, and it turned out that I had guessed it, but I hadn't given him the right name. It was just my list of people.
Yeah.
So he told me I had essentially, you know, I said, oh, I had that name. He goes, well, I guess you guessed it, but you never told it to me directly. And so I the next step was to find out who the guy was and how relevant he was and if he was connected to UFO stuff. And all I was ever able to find out after reading some of his books and doing some research is that, yes, he was in the CIA, the OSS before that, and it's completely plausible that he would be brought out of retirement to run something like this.
Yeah.
And I don't know, you know, you could say that Bill Moore just pulled this name out of nowhere and, you know, stuck it in there because just to create some controversy. I don't know why. He shouldn't even care. He doesn't really care. I personally can tell it. He doesn't really care if people know who Falcon is.
Right.
He just told me because I was really interested, and he wouldn't tell me while I was doing the book. And I don't know why he thought the time was right after the book was already, you know, at the printer and there's nothing I could do about it.
Right.
And maybe that's why he did it. I don't know. But as it turns out, the guy would... If you looked at the story as I wrote it, it was told to me by various people, not just Bill Moore, but a bunch of different people. The name seems to fit. The circumstances and what the guy was good at seems to fit with everything else he told me. Like I said, he could have, you know, back engineered it or whatever.
Hmm.
And then, you know, the thing that made me happiest is that, you know, the Canadian researcher Grant Cameron, as soon as he shot that all over the internet as soon as I said it. I mean, before I was even done with my talk.
Nice.
He sent the name out to everybody. And what I thought by saying this, one of the main reasons I did it was because I thought, well, maybe there's somebody else with more resources than I have a better wherewithal to show where he was, what he was doing, what he was interested in, who he was talking to, all the stuff that I didn't have access to.
Right.
And can get back to me with that or publish something more relevant that could show that. And Grant Cameron sort of did that. He just put it in historical context. And what he said, which made me very happy, was that he said, there is no reason why this shouldn't make any sense. It totally makes sense in context of everything else. One, that Greg has said, me, and everything that he's found out and documented, which is a lot. I mean, you take Project Beta and, like, expand it by, like, 1,000 pages. That's the amount of information Grant Cameron has.
Oh, wow.
And he said, you know, the guy's got a steel trap mind. He retains everything, and he's got an essay on it about Falcon and about Harry Rozitsky, who was the guy's name. And he puts it in historical context with everything else that he's been studying for a long time about disclosure, and I don't really know if you should call it disclosure, but about the government's role in the UFO world, I guess, the UFO subject, and how they disseminate that information or how they treat it. He said that to him it made perfect sense. And he's a hardcore ETH believer, I believe. I think he's fairly convinced it's aliens coming from other planets and structured ships. He's a very dyed-in-the-wool UFO researcher. And he even agreed with me. So that made me feel a lot better, actually.
Yeah.
So if anybody has any time, yeah, go to Grant Cameron's site and just look up the Harry Rozitsky article, Falcon article that he wrote. I don't know what it's called, the President's UFO website.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know what specifically. Just Google Grant Cameron, you'll find it.
Yeah. So that was the upshot of it. I haven't heard from anybody yet except for Grant wrote that thing. But there's nobody from the inside or somebody who would know that. Oh yeah, that guy. I wondered what he was doing in 1981 with all those people.
Right.
You know, and the other people supposedly in the aviary have never gotten back to me and said, oh yeah, I remember that dude, because I don't think he exposed himself too much to the other. There's a very large dog fight outside right now.
Nice.
yeah, it sounds like dog apocalypse. Nobody else in the supposed quote unquote aviary has ever gotten back to me or anybody to know and said, oh yeah, that was the guy.
Yeah, right. Plus it's like, why would he really give out too much of information about himself anyway? You know?
Well, he never did. You mean Falcon?
Yeah.
Well, he never did. I actually said, and this went in the book too. You know, Bill tried to get nice and familiar with him and how the family and all that, and he said the guy would just give him a blank look and go back to business at hand. He did not care to be friendly or familiar or anything like that. He said this, you know, his idea was, we're doing a job, this is a job, that's all we have to talk about.
Right. Now, I heard
parted in is this.
You've heard from Bill Moore for the holidays, I heard.
Yeah, he emailed me, so he's still around. He's in the East somewhere. I don't know where he is. Really, I don't know. So, but he emailed me and said, you know, Merry Christmas and hope you're doing well. And
well, that's good.
So I was glad to hear from him.
Yeah, yeah, because he's kind of gone off your radar for a while.
Yeah. Actually, one of his research people that he used to work with called me and said, I heard you're going to announce who Falcon is. I heard from Grant Cameron. Don't you think you should ask permission? And I wrote, I didn't remember the guy. I said, ask permission from who? He said, from Bill, of course. And I said, Bill gave me permission. He gave me permission when he told me.
Yeah, what was the guy? Was the guy, like, mad?
Yeah, he thought that I was trying to jump the, you know, basically reveal something that was told to me in confidence. Because he knew Bill, and Bill told him a lot of things in confidence.
Yeah.
Bill told me other stuff in confidence that I've never talked about, most of which I've forgotten because it's not relevant anymore. But one of those things was the Falcon thing, and as soon as he told me, I said, what do you want me to do with this? He said, do whatever you want with it. I don't care.
Nice. Yeah. That's weird that the guy got all verklempt about it.
Well, as soon as I told him, I said, I just talked to Bill the other day, in fact, before you even emailed me and said, I'm going to do this, and do you mind? And Bill said, well, I don't care. I told you could do it when I told you, so do whatever you like. And he told me, Bill told me a couple more things that I said during the talk.
Yeah.
Just a couple of more tidbits of information that he never said before when he knew I was going to announce it on the internet on that talk, and it had to do with who else was in the organization, who was running it, How it was run out of the CIA and how it was run off the books and all that.
Yeah.
Incredibly ancient past history, but it's also relevant to understanding how we got to where we are now, and to be careful when you hear anything coming from the government about UFOs, to be, you know, not to, especially if you're a researcher and they, you know, somebody wants to take you aside and say, you know, I've got this little piece of information that nobody else is going to get.
Yeah, that would make me more suspicious than
that. Yeah. You know, and most people, not just UFO researchers, most people say, oh, well, somebody important in the government is telling me something. It must be important and I must be important.
Right, right.
So that's, you know, if they want some BS to come out or want to start spreading certain rumors or whatever, go to the eager UFO researchers or any eager journalists or whatever and start leaking these stories.
Exactly. That's maybe where a lot of this UFO porn comes from.
Who knows? The weird naval intelligence guy in the 90s that used to show my and my friends stuff, a lot of it were UFO porno pictures of supposed, like, you know, UFOs being tested Area 51 with the hangars in the background and all that. There was no way I could tell whether those were real or not. I did not know. I never even published any of them. I just, you know, it's just kind of like, okay, that's interesting. You're scaring the crap out of me here in a lot of ways, but, you know, that's interesting. He did. He went out of his way to make me paranoid, and it worked.
And here you are today.
Well, I just got tired of being paranoid after a while.
Yeah, well, you know, there's no point in really being... I don't understand the people that are, like, super paranoid. You know, I mean, sometimes, like earlier tonight, we were talking and we got all this static and everything. We don't necessarily believe the government's tinkering with things, but sometimes it's a little more fun to acknowledge the possibility.
Yeah, I've had my mail opened and tampered with from certain people. That happened for a while. I think I had, you know, people maybe looking in my windows or taking pictures of it, but, you know, those could have been real estate people. I'm sure people were tampering with my mail.
Yeah.
Because it was just from certain people. But what am I going to do about it? I mean, you know, finally I just said, look, I'm doing nothing illegal, so what do I have to be worried about? I don't have child porn on my computer. I don't have any drugs, you know, in the house. I'm not doing anything wrong. I have nothing to hide. So if somebody's watching me, they must want me to know because I've noticed it.
Right, right.
And then after a while, either they stopped or I stopped noticing because it went away. In fact, when I made the decision to stop worrying about it, a lot of it went away. It just happened to be... You know, some people say, oh, well, you stop being so vigilant about it, and then, of course, you don't notice anymore. But if nothing's happening to me, I'm doing nothing wrong, why should I care?
Exactly.
I hope somebody isn't watching me when, you know, I'm going to the bathroom or taking a shower or whatever, but I don't think they're interested in that crap. You know, I think they would be more interested in who is communicating with me and for what purpose.
Right, and it, just to get really creepy, I mean, you got to figure that in this modern age, they don't need to be hanging around outside your window and shit. They can just probably just punch in some kind of thing on the computer and read all your emails no matter what. So
yeah, well, this was like in the mid '90s or
right.
Early to mid '93 or '94 when I like just, you know, people had AOL and stuff.
Right. Nowadays, they have total access to your email, they have total access to your Facebook, so they don't need to be following you around. As frightening as that
people ask that
prospect is.
Like, do you think people are, you know, government people are involved in the UFO thing? And I was like, no, I think all they have to do is read people's emails and look at their website.
Right, right.
Or if they really want to, listen to their cell phone calls, any phone call.
Exactly.
You don't even have to have any contact with the person. You know who they're going to talk to, you know who they're... If people are smart, I've met paranoid people that will only talk to me in a public place but away from other people. Or either that or in a private house where they know what's going on.
Yeah.
I've had, you know, people I talked to for Project Beta and other that you could tell they were old spies because they would only do certain things a certain way based on keeping other people from hearing. Whether people were listening to us or not, I don't know, but I think that was just their habit.
Yeah. Interesting.
And you notice every time, it's like, they're all going to pick the corner table away from everybody else at the restaurant. And it's going to be a restaurant that they know, and they know the people there that run it and all that. They've been going there for years.
Right.
Yeah, but that happened way more than a couple of times.
Interesting. Interesting. This has gone down an even weirder path than I expected here. People tuning in for the 2012 review were probably like, what the fuck, man? They barely talked about anything. But there really wasn't anything, you know, to get since we've got about 15 minutes left to circle back around. I mean, there wasn't a whole lot to talk about in 2012 that I think that, that people should be, I wouldn't say concerned, but maybe that people should be intrigued about. I like to think that my audience and your audience, they're a discerning group of people. And I mean, I posted the call for stories and stuff that we might have missed, and a lot of people just didn't really have anything to say, so.
There you go.
Yeah, I think the whole idea of rehashing. What's that?
There's something on my list that didn't come up.
What's that?
Which you probably saw, some anonymous guy named David, apparently, in Kentucky, said that his family was being plagued by goblins.
Yeah, someone posted that on my Facebook. Apparently it was a hoax.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it kind of looked like a hoax, but it was such a great... And you could tell, you know, it was so near the Kelly Hopkinsville thing and sounded like it.
Yeah.
You know, just in a different form. That was a great hoax then. It was very entertaining seeing what they had on there. And the guy that wrote it up was kind of like, this is intriguing. It sounds interesting. The guy isn't really communicating with me very much. He sent me these weird pictures. What do you think of them? He wasn't saying, oh my God, this guy is being plagued by goblins.
Right.
Let's go down. They were thinking of going down there because the guy asked them to come down there because he thought that the goblins were coming out of a cave near his, or a mine near his property. Which is interesting actually because if you read some of the Fortean and I guess more on the kind of humanoid creature end of things, a lot of this stuff happens around abandoned mines and caves and stuff.
It's I definitely think there's weird shit in caves and stuff. Absolutely.
Yeah. And it seems, you know, a few researchers have pointed out that any place that's riddled with caves, mines, underground facilities, and all that seem to have some sort of weirdness connected with them, because of the fact that there's open spaces underground. However that affects the local environment, maybe things live in the caves, or maybe people's brains are affected differently around those kind of things because of the energies there or something. I do not know. But it's fascinating to me. If the guy picked a great place and context for his hoax.
Yeah, absolutely. Interesting. So the goblins, that excited you this year.
Yeah, I like that story. He said they had large oily eyes. I don't know how you have an oily eye. A little slit for a mouth and not much nose, and they look like, he said his daughter said that the hairless white children were playing around in the garden again, and it scared her.
Oh, God.
Anyway, that's too bad it was a hoax, because it's such a great story. Well, it's still a great story. I mean, it's fascinating. Like I said, either the guy was just a savant, or he did a little bit of research.
Well, that reminds me of one
bit of research.
Sort of genre that's picked up a lot of interest. That's the Black-Eyed Kids. There's been a new book that came out this year about it. Jason Offit's been on my show a couple times talking about it, and that's sort of picked up steam quite a bit. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, that's a good creepy subgenre of this horror humanoids. Yeah, I wrote something about it on UFO Mystic a few years ago, and it creeped me out then. I gotta see some of these, see these books about it.
Yeah.
And the other thing that was we talked about it last year on the end of year thing, the strange noises.
Yeah, that picked up huge right after you mentioned it on the show. Both of us mentioned it, actually. Yeah,
we were saying, wow, what about all these noises everywhere? And then in January, they're like, all over
right.
the world.
Right.
Like,
see, I forgot all about
very
that.
Quickly. Yeah.
Yeah, that was like the big thing.
I looked at some of the videos, and they sounded like horns or something like that, and some of them looked like hoaxes, and who knows?
Yeah, I remember that, now that you mention it. I had totally forgotten about the big anomalous sounds
flap,
yeah, that happened at the beginning of the year. So it just goes to show you, I mean, these things happen, they come along, You know, and in the immortal words of Marco from my Facebook wall, I never saw anything, any follow-up to it. It's very frustrating. I mean, seriously, have you heard anything about the anomalous sounds since?
No.
It's no. Like, okay, well, we don't know what they are. They're
interesting. Find out very quickly.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's because there are a lot of hoaxes that played off each other, or there was a few, you know, a few things that have precipitated it, and it's, but it's not like there's not a history of strange sounds, being heard in different places. But this was just like, it was like a, yeah, it was a flap. It was like, and it was worldwide too.
The paranormal community's New Year's resolution for 2013 should be more follow-up.
Yeah. Follow up on this. Maybe I'll find out from Jeff Gonzalez if they actually ever got the DNA tested from the Bigfoot face smear on his truck. I'd like to follow up on that. And the other thing is, he said he'd take me up in the mountains where they would always hear or experience Bigfoot noises. He said he was going to take me up there, and it never happened. And I really want to go.
Yeah, you should.
Not now because it's covered in snow. But when it thaws, I'm going to bug him again about it.
There you go.
I'd like to be in the woods and have somebody come in and start, Bigfoot come crashing through. Wouldn't scare me. They've never hurt anybody. It would be startling and probably get your heart pounding, but I wouldn't feel like in any mortal danger. Just like ghosts, I would be startled and excited by some sort of ghost sighting, but I don't think I'd be afraid.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Getting scratched and smacked or whatever like some people get.
Yeah, if that happened, that'd be a different story, but if it's just sort
of like...
But still,
it doesn't kill anyone, you know? I've never heard of, like, serious injury happening. Unless you talk about the Bell Witch thing where the guy just got sick and sicker and sicker and died, but...
Right, right. Or if you have a heart attack from the fright or something, it scares you, surprises you so much that you have a heart attack. I suppose that happens. That's possible. Now, we're near the end of our 2 hours here. What... You've written the Falcon piece, so that was something that you've been teasing out for the last few years. What are you working on now? Are you putting together anything? I know UFO Mystic has gone the way of the dodo, so...
Yeah, it's just not there. What I want to do is get some of that stuff and just publish it, because it's not online anymore, which is good, because people can't access it now. I mean, it's good for a book.
Right,
because then people can't access it, and then, you know, write some other stuff for it. Because I made the mistake of really pouring a lot of heart and soul thought and research into that site.
You don't have that stuff saved, like, on your computer anywhere?
I have some of it.
Yeah.
I started collecting it. You know, it's like, oh, this is going to go down someday, so I started collecting it. It's not gone. I mean, the guy that owns the site still has it.
Right, right.
He still has all the data. I just like him to send it to me. But, you know, that would be interesting to do. I've got a quasi project with Adam Gorightly that we're kind of kicking back and forth. And I don't know past that. I was going to try and write a book on, like, different UFO theories. Now that's, you know, Micah Hanks has done it. Paul did it with his book, with The Other Side of Truth.
Yeah.
So I don't feel like I have anything really to add, because they said all the stuff that I pretty much said all the stuff I wanted to say. I said it would just be like, you know, an addendum to everything those guys have said and Mac has said and in his book, etc.
So you're working on that stuff, so and obviously Radio Mysterioso.
Yeah, that'll keep going. I don't go out and like voraciously look for guests right now. I think it'll be more like one, when I want to talk to people that listen to the show, they'll be colleges. Two, when I want to talk to people that I basically know pretty well and we just have more stuff to hash out. Talk about, have fun with, like I did with Gorightly last week.
Yeah.
Or Bob Emmenegger coming up. Then once in a while, there'll be like somebody I've really wanted for a long time, like Dean Radin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and, you know, I'd like to have Whitley Strieber on. I don't know if that'll ever happen. I'd like to have Art Bell on. That probably will never happen. You know, I want to have Lauren Coleman on. That probably will happen.
Nice.
Rob Sterling from The Conformists is going to be on in a couple weeks. Bob Emmenegger is coming back. There's a very good chance that Ken Thomas will be in town, and I have him on at the end of the month, the last Sunday of the month. So, yeah, it's still going. It's a viable thing, and I want to keep doing it. It's just that it's not the center of my life. It's just a really strong interest now, where it used to be the center of my life. Now it's just a really strong interest. I'd like to keep going. It could move back to the center of my life. I don't know. I don't want it out of my life. It still makes me happy.
Right. It sounds like we're in similar places. I mean, I enjoy doing the program, but I have a life.
and yeah, you know, I already blew through my 20s, so I don't want to look back when I'm like 39 and be like, shit, I really could have done more, you know, with
yeah,
my
well,
life.
Yeah, well, I didn't even start the magazine until I was 30.
See, you enjoyed your 20s then, so you didn't blow through it, you know.
Well, I
try to put out a weekly.
I enjoyed
show.
My third. Well, really, I enjoyed my 30s a lot more than I enjoyed my 20s. My 20s, I was just miserable.
That's
self-imposed misery for the entire. And then when I got into my 30s, I had a life-changing thing. I realized, hey, I could either kill myself or I could decide to do stuff that makes me happy and makes life fun. So I decided to use that script, and that one's worked since then. So.
There you go. I think that may be the perfect.
Yeah.
Way to close out this this wrap up. You know, the only other thing is traditionally we do, or I do, sort of the what's hot, what's not here at the end of the year, and I'll just do that quickly. I didn't write them down or anything, but I feel like ghost hunting definitely the bloom is off the rose, though. I think it's starting to fade out a little bit. I don't see as much about it.
Starting to go.
A couple of people have pointed out to me Ancient Aliens, the whole. Not just the TV show, but the whole sort of ancient astronaut things got a little bit of momentum behind it. Mostly due to the show.
Really?
It seems to be that way, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. And maybe sort of alternative, let's frame that actually as alternative ufology. So alternative ufology sort of picking up steam. Bigfoot, big time. I'd say that's the hottest thing going right now.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And,
Bigfoot and,
And I think with these shootings this year, I think we're going to see an uptick in conspiracy in 2013.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people talking about the gun control, the shootings, where they orchestrated. It's got a lot of momentum behind it, unfortunately.
Legs, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So I think, you know.
You're right. Yeah.
I think conspiracy, and we got the JFK 50th coming up in November. So I think it's going to be a big year for conspiracy. I think it's going to be a big year for Bigfoot. Alternative ufology will be a big year. Classic ufology, no. Disclosure exopolitics, no. Ghost hunting and ghost stuff, no. That's my what's hot, what's not for 2013.
I don't have any argument with that, unfortunately.
Good, because we're right at the very end, so.
Yeah, and maybe paranormal topics as the year progresses and maybe in the next year, depending on what happens in the, you know,
sort of like fringy paranormal stuff.
Yeah, no, more like, you know, I just saw a report like, you know, woman controls robotic arm psychically. Well, it's not really psychic, it's just mapping her brain and what it does when she's imagining moving her arm.
Right.
But I think there'll be more of that, like people will be able to do things by thinking about it. Just because of the way the brain lights up when you want to do certain things in your, you know, whatever area the brain lights up when you want to move your arm or drive a car or whatever the hell.
Exactly,
that kind of stuff is going to, in the next few years, is going to be big.
I agree with that as well. So that's what people should be or could be or can be looking forward to in 2013. 2012, as I said on my Facebook wall, you know, goodbye and good riddance. We are finally free of the albatross that is 2012, and you know, a whole cottage industry has gone away. So that's an interesting development.
Thank God, or thank Zooey Cook or whatever Mayan deity you want to.
Yeah, Quetzalcoatl or something. Yes, thank you to him for wrapping up the 2012 foolishness. So on that note, you know, thank you very much for coming back on the show, Greg. We'll have you back, obviously, for the baseball special, and we'll definitely have to do another jam session maybe this summer where we don't have to deal with a lot of this annual stuff.
I always enjoy it, and I'm always you find this surprising. I'm always surprised that I'm coming back on to talk with you because I really enjoy it, and I always think, oh, well, I'm not relevant anymore, so... Oh, wait, he's calling me again. This is great.
Now, you'll always be relevant with me, and I'm not just kissing your ass here. You know, you've been on the most of anybody on the show, and even when I was just some little punk clown writing on the internet, just dropped your name, and it was, you know, we've been friends ever since. So, you know, and a lot of people probably can assume this. Greg is the recipient of many a drunken and sober phone call from me to touch base and sort of have these conversations without an audience.
So I appreciate
your
friendship.
Well, you can tell that I'm never bored because we always talk for at least an hour or more.
Oh, absolutely, yeah, for sure. Yeah. So I know you got to get to work. So thank you very much for coming back on the show, Greg, and looking forward to doing it again in the future.
Thanks very much, Tim. Talk to you soon.
That does it for our 2012 Year in Review edition of the program. Big, big thanks to Greg Bishop for returning to the show. Be sure to tune in to his fantastic podcast, Radio Mysterioso, which you can find at www.radiomysterioso.com. Check it out. Moving right along now, it's time for BOA Audio Listener Feedback, and we have a slew of letters from the BOA Audio listeners, especially since we skipped listener feedback the last two installments of the program. So let's dig on in. The first one comes from Stephen B. on Facebook, who had a very hilarious response to my posting that I was about to tape the Year in Review episode with Greg Bishop. Here's what Stephen has to say. These episodes are a guilty pleasure of mine. With that said, if this interview is anything like the last few years, I would imagine we will be hearing Bishop ranting about how lame UFO research is becoming, how there are no more good UFO cases, and how the whole endeavor is a waste of time. Tim will agree and say yeah over and over. Then they will end by promoting their UFO-centric radio shows. Or they will spend an ungodly amount of time highlighting all the non-UFO guests that they had on their programs this year as a way of convincing each other that they are gravitating away from the topic and should no longer be associated with UFOs. I say screw it. We need a season of nothing but UFO crazies. Invite Dan Burrish, Robert O'Dean, the people from Project Camelot, and John Lear for a roundtable discussion. I think that is probably the first ever listener feedback that I received prior to the recording of the show, and having listened to the Year in Review episode, it's frighteningly accurate as to how the whole conversation went down. Although, I noted to Stephen that this year's installment was not as dire as previous years, I don't think. And if you look back at BOA Audio the last few seasons, I've definitely moved away from the topic of UFOs. And we even tried to kind of label this year's Year in Review program as just a straight Year in Review or a paranormal Year in Review, since we really didn't talk as much about UFOs as we normally do. But really, at the end of the day, Stephen pretty much nailed the tenor of our Year in Review programs, although I like to think we change it up every so often and evolve a little bit every year. Thank you for giving me a good chuckle, Stephen, and thank you for your feedback on the program. Hopefully, we satisfied your guilty pleasure desires once again as we closed out 2012. Next email comes from Justin, no hometown listed. Here's what he has to say. I've been following your podcast for the past couple of years and greatly enjoy you and your guests. I want to compliment you on recent improvements you've made, consciously or not, to your interviewing technique. Over the past few podcasts, you have decreased doing two things that I believe you used as ways to agree, encourage, or interact with your guests. What I am saying is, you are using the term right, much less, as well as an over-enthusiastic laugh. As someone who does a lot of presenting in my career, I know how easy it is to pick up bad habits, and how hard it can be to shake them, so I commend you. All the best in the new year, and looking forward to hearing what you have in store. Justin. Thank you for writing in, Justin. I appreciate your kind words about the program. And I'll be honest with you, I noticed the habit of saying right that I've picked up over the last few years. And while I do try to stop saying it as much as possible, I'll be honest and let you know that I do often cut it out of the program in the post-show editing. So I am still sometimes saying it, you're just not hearing it since it's cut out when I edit the show. And really, ironically enough, the right habit comes from the original habit, which drew the ire of many BOA Audio listeners, and that was the yeah habit, where I would say yeah. So I replaced Yeah Yeah with Right Right, and I guess you can look forward to some other new bad habit emerging here in 2013. Although, as I pointed out way back when we were discussing the whole Yeah Yeah controversy on the program way in the past, it's really just sort of my way of, as you note, encouraging the guest, interacting a little bit. I don't want to interrupt them. I want to let them know that I'm still listening. Some guests, they get a little perturbed. They get a little taken aback sometimes by the BOA style, since they're not immediately interrupted by the host as soon as they finish making a point or right in the middle of their point. It's kind of my way of letting them know, yes, I'm listening, I'm here, and I want to hear more of what you have to say, which I think is really the attitude of the BOA Audio listeners as well. Although, having listened to the programs numerous times when I edit them and then when I put them out for the BOA Audio listeners, I've definitely noticed the right-right trend and will be definitely more conscious of it going forward. With regards to the over-enthusiastic laugh, I can honestly say that I really genuinely am laughing. There's really never any times when I'm doing a fake laugh on the program. I'm not someone who does fake laughs. So if that was your suspicion, I can dispel that pretty easily by letting you know what when you hear me laugh on the program, I am actually laughing. My attitude about the laugh is, and I've said this to friends and on other programs, my goal really is to get a laugh going in the first few moments of the program, in the opening dialogue, if you will. If I can get the guest to relax, laugh, lighten up, that brings out some tremendous material from them because they know that they're talking to someone who's on their side. They're not going to be set up into some kind of gotcha situation. I think that really is what brings out a lot of great material. So that's sort of a little look behind the scenes at the program, thanks to this email here from Justin. Thank you, my friend, for writing in. Next email comes from Jeff in New York City. He asks, any chance you could get Bix Weir on the show again? Things feel like they are getting sort of wonky in the financial world, and it would be interesting to hear from him again. Jeff in New York City. It's always possible that we'll get Bix Weir back on the show. I'm certain we'll have him on again in the future. But right now, we just put out a ton of programs with previous BOA Audio guests. We still got two more programs with previous BOA Audio guests still to get out to the listeners. So chances are the first-time guests, the fresh guests, will not be appearing until February. And I really want to focus on bringing in some new names and some new researchers following the next two editions of the show. So beyond just Bix Weir, this isn't a judgment on Bix. This is just a format issue, if you will. Returning guests likely will not be showing up on the program until later on in the spring, perhaps, or even when we kick off season 8. So it's going to be quite a ways away before I start bringing back some of our previous guests beyond the next two programs, because I've got a huge list of guests that I want to talk to that have never been on the program before. I'm scheduling those programs as I speak. So that's kind of the direction that we're heading in here as 2013 begins. Once again, another peek behind the curtain here, courtesy of this emailer, Jeff, in New York City. Of course, folks should check out the Bix Weir edition of the program from a few years ago and check out Bix Weir's website as well for more information on him. Maybe we'll do a financial edition of the program, but with a different first-time guest. That's definitely a possibility and one you should keep an eye out for. It's a shame that Aaron Russo has passed away because I think a taxes edition of the program would be fascinating. So maybe I'll look into that for a future installment of the show. We got more here, folks. We got a posting from Montine on the BOA Facebook page, which you can find at Banal of America on Facebook. Just punch in BOA, Banal of America. That will bring up the Facebook page. She posts, I have never heard of death education classes until your chat with William Zabel, who seems to have dropped off the radar screen yet again. So I searched it and found an interesting link. Actually, there are tons of links, but this one has to do directly with a student from Columbine back in 1985, Montine. And just to be clear, Montine posted a link here that says Death Education at Columbine High, and the URL is RitalinDeath.com. So maybe you have to search out Columbine there on RitalinDeath.com, but that's an example, I guess you could say, of the postings from the BOA audio listeners on the BOA Facebook page. As far as William Zabel goes, I have not spoken with William Zabel, but I'm pretty sure he's still on Facebook. He's still pretty active. He has not gone missing or incommunicado, so I'm not positive really what Montine is talking about. Maybe I'll look further into this in the next few days, but I'm pretty sure William Zabel is still around. And really, just wanted to highlight the Banal of America Facebook page and mention that there are some great posts there from the BOA audio listeners with cool stories. On December 21st, Kirk posted the top 5 lesser-known failed apocalypses. And Joe posted a photo on December 23rd that says, Myery Christmas, with a picture of Billy Meyer, and a Happy New Greer with a picture of Stephen Greer. So there's some laughs, there's some cool posts, there's some interesting articles linked up by the BOA listeners on the Banal of America Facebook page. So it is not just a promotional vehicle for me, it is also a place for BOA listeners to share cool stuff as well. And the final bit here of BOA audio listener feedback is a long-term plug, because I was contacted by Pat Daniels, co-host of The Fringe Radio Show on KTKK AM 630, and he has invited me on to his program to discuss BOA and the world of the paranormal, and in a development that really kind of made me feel like I am way behind the ball here, he has scheduled me for an appearance on March 13th, 2013. So over 2 months away. That's why I said it's a long-term plug. But as far as I know, I am free. I have confirmed the date, and more information will be forthcoming in the future. But I wanted to let you know that I will be on The Fringe Radio Show on KTKK AM 630 on March 13th, 2013. You can find out more from Pat Daniels at thefringeradioshow.com, and I will be plugging it again as we get closer to March 13th. Unbelievable. I don't know how he can do that. Schedule so far in advance. Makes me feel like I'm dropping the ball here on BOA Audio, but I'm doing the best I can, folks, and I will be appearing on The Fringe Radio Show 3/13/13, so tune in. And with that said, we will wrap up BOA audio listener feedback here this week. Big thanks to Stephen B., Justin, Jeff, Montine, and Pat Daniels for their correspondences here on the program. If you'd like to be a part of future installments of BOA audio listener feedback, there are a number of ways to do so. You can write to boaaudio@hotmail.com. Or head on over to banalofamerica.com, B-I-N-N-A-L-L ofamerica.com, and click the contact button. If you want something a little more interactive, you can join up at the official BOA forum, theusofe.com, theusofe.com. It is BOA's paranormal playground, theusofe.com. Additionally, I am on Facebook and Twitter, so just punch in Binall, B-I-N-N-A-L-L. That will bring you to my respective pages on those social network sites. And finally, please allow me to plug the Binall of America Facebook page. We've stalled out here at 867. We want to get over the hump. We want to get to 1,000, and we need the BOA listeners to like us on Facebook in order to reach the mythical and meaningless 1,000 likes. Head on over to Facebook, punch in Banal of America. There you will find news on the program. You will find contests here in 2013. We just launched the BOA Death Pool. So if you have a gallows sense of humor, you may like that. And there's tons of postings from BOA listeners as well. Banal of America on Facebook. Check it out and like us. So those are the means to get in touch with me to appear on future installments of BOA Audio Listener Feedback. Up next, please allow me to pause and thank the outstanding and esteemed BOA staff. Leslie, Chiron, Regan Lee, Joe V, Tina Senna, Richard Thomas, Marla Pena, Bruce Pretty, Tony Morrill, and our webmaster Jeremy Boston. Not too much to plug here, since between the last program and this edition of the show was the holiday season, and the BOA staff was off enjoying the holidays with their families, but we've got lots of cool stuff lined up for you in the weeks and months to come here at Banal of America. I am going to make it a serious goal to revamp the website and really develop a whole bunch of new features for the BOA visitors. I've kind of let Banal of America, the website, slip a little bit as I focused more on the program and my off-site jobs. But now, here in 2013, I really want to make it a key feature and aspect of the program. So stay tuned to Banal of America and make it a part of your everyday search for esoteric insights and opinions. Now comes the time in the program where I take my hat off and pass it around to the BOA audio listeners and ask you to make a donation to Banal of America. How do you do that? That's simple. You can head on over to BOA and click the PayPal button. That'll take you to PayPal. They'll walk you through the process. It's safe, simple, and secure. But if you don't trust the internet and you want to make a donation via snail mail, you can do so as well. Simply send your donation or correspondence to Tim Banal, P.O. Box 232, Pinehurst, Mass. 01866. And you spell Pinehurst, P-I-N-E-H-U-R-S-T. The complete address can be found at Banal of America, right under the PayPal button. And as always, it bears repeating, my friends, no donation is too small, and all donations go towards Banal of America and BOA Audio to help keep the entire franchise up and running, freely available, and commercial-free for all of our great readers and listeners the world over. On the next edition of the program, we are welcoming back Extreme Explorer Adam Davies for his annual update on his expeditions of the past year. In 2012, Adam Davies not only journeyed back to Sumatra in search of the Orang Pendek, but he also traveled here to the United States to look for Bigfoot. Both adventures garnered a wealth of tremendous information and really shook up the cryptozoology world in a number of ways. The trip to America created a firestorm in the world of cryptozoology because there was some very interesting footage captured on a trail cam while Adam Davies and his crew was sleeping. It created just a huge brouhaha in Bigfoot research, which was only really overshadowed by the Melba Ketchum DNA story that came out about a month later. For a while, everybody was talking about this trail cam footage. I kind of wanted to get Adam on back then, but then I said, let's just wait till this thing settles down, and we'll talk about it in January. So we're going to hear all about that, and we're going to hear about Adam's return to Sumatra, where... And I have not got this confirmed. We're going to have to look deeper into this, obviously, before I sit down to talk to Adam. But I am pretty sure he has finally now seen the Orang Pendek. So that is a very good possibility that it happened in 2012. And if so, it is a landmark moment for him personally and for Orang Pendek research. We'll find out whether he saw the Orang Pendek. We'll also find out what new insights he may have gleaned from this return to Sumatra. My conversations with Adam Davies are always super loose and the kind of conversations that you would really hear if Adam and I were just sitting down having a beer. So that's going to be on the next edition of the program. I'll be taping that one in a couple of days, so I can't really give you much more of a preview beyond that. Except to say that I'm going to really try and buckle down and get it out to you as soon as possible, because we're developing now a backlog of programs that need to get out to the VOA audio listeners. We've still got this epic Paul Kimball edition of the show, and we've got two episodes with new guests that are sitting in the can and have yet to be rolled out to the VOA audio listeners, plus a whole bunch more that have been scheduled. So we've got tons of stuff for you folks. Next time on the program, though, it is Adam Davies talking about the extreme expeditions of 2012. And with all that said, once again, I want to wish you all a very happy new year. Thank you for your support of VOA Audio in 2012. 2013 is going to be amazing, my friends. Stay tuned for some awesome, awesome stuff from Banal of America. Big, big thanks once again to Greg Bishop. Big thanks to all of the listeners who contributed to BOA Audio Listener Feedback. And, of course, enormous thanks to all you folks out there, the hardcore BOA Audio listeners. Thank you so much for your support of the program, and thank you once again for making BOA Audio a part of your esoteric audio playlist. Until next time, this is Tim Banal, thanking you for listening and signing off.